Don't call him Kenny.
I'll call him Kenneth.
I mean, that surprising. He scored 42 points in an NBA game one time.
I know.
Did he?
Yeah.
I just don't think the G League is a real league that
No,
matters.
It's not. Yeah, he scored 42 points against the Oklahoma City Thunder one time.
52 points.
So a G League team.
Yeah.
Right. Let's, are we recording?
Yeah, we're recording.
Yeah. This is part of it.
That's it started.
I'll start it right now. Three,
no,
two.
No, we've started already.
What the hell?
We're in it.
I'm so confused. You said you hit the backup. God.
My real one doesn't tell you when I'm recording in case I want to blackmail you ever.
Just a
ooh.
Yeah.
All the slurs I say off. Yeah. Off
this
mic.
Is where you say all the bad stuff about Kenneth.
Yeah. When you're like, you know, I love
he's not
Carl
Knuff.
Malone.
Yeah. Kenneth Lofton will never be Carl Malone.
Hopefully. Should we just do the show?
Yeah. Anyway, the G League isn't real. That's my conspiracy for the day.
Did you go to any Jazz games?
Yeah, a lot.
Kobe Bryant, another air ball.
And when I know by my significant amount of research that it isn't.
That was a masterpiece of dog shit.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Unsalvageable, a Utah Jazz podcast with me, Sarah Todd, Jazz beat reporter for the Deseret News, and as always, my co-host, Greg Foster. Jazz are still bad.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
I have an interesting question for you, okay. And it's something we kind of talked about a little bit in previous episodes. Is Lauri Markkanen on this team the next time the Jazz make the playoffs?
I don't know, Greg. I don't know.
That's the most perplexing thing is that there's no way to predict what's going on at all.
I'm having a hard time the last couple of days deciding whether or not, like, okay, so the Jazz are clearly in. Let's try and find some young talent mode.
They're in full tank mode. Let's not mince words.
Full tank mode while also being like, we got to find young guys that pop.
Yep.
Within their like sort of long-term plan, there is like they're trying to stay in flexibility mode, right? Mm-hmm. Consistently be paying money, but not long-term, but also have like 40 to 60 million in wiggle room whenever they would need it, along with enough draft picks to get a disgruntled star if that were to happen. Mm-hmm. Within that long-term plan, they're also like, I think, willing to pivot, like, okay, well, if it takes too long and the young guys we have are going to be on a longer timeline, then like they could trade Lowry. If the disgruntled star happens next year and they can use some of the picks then to get some role players and use the young guys they have right now, they could pivot towards Lowry's timeline. And what I'm having a hard time with is deciding if that's a good plan, right? Like,
I mean, it does seem like, you know, you got to kind of pick a lane and go with it.
It does feel like, yeah, that's the thing is like, is the... we'll just like wait and see and pivot whichever way needed. Is that a good plan? Or like would fans rather have them be like, we're doing the Lowry timeline, or like, no, we're waiting longer?
Yeah, I think the big thing is that you run the risk of pissing off your vets and your star and like, I don't know, pissing off and burning out your coach.
I mean, I think you got probably a lot longer before you piss off Will Hardy in that sense. Mm-hmm. Lowry is
mad.
Listen, if you piss off Lowry to the point that he doesn't want to do this, then you could just trade him, right?
Yeah.
Sure. That's really like, but then do you run the risk of what we talked about and like, I don't know, having a poor image for players and being like, oh yeah, Utah's just a place where like you churn and burn and you just go there and like Danny get a check.
Already has that. Like,
yeah, I know, but it doesn't. Yeah. I don't care about the Celtics. This I want to talk about the Jazz and the right, team that I care about.
What I mean
about.
Is the but with NBA players, they already know, think just, of him as like a user.
Yeah, and that's yeah. that's the problem that really bothers me. And it's just, you know, it's history repeating itself.
I mean, Isaiah Thomas
and,
will call anybody and tell him what he thinks about it, Danny Ainge.
Danny
I mean,
Ainge,
the good Isaiah or, Thomas, not the jerk yeah. one.
Isaiah Thomas, the good one that doesn't have a rap sheet and mm-hmm. you know beats
the one
women.
With the correct vowels in his name.
Yes, yeah. come on the show, talk about your time with the Stars. You know that real team in the G League that exists.
Yeah, because I think as we're talking about this, like, I think that if you were able to like keep everyone happy, then like. Playing in that wiggle room, being able to pivot whatever way the players fall into your lap, right? Like, that's fine. But it's not only like, do you piss off Lowry? It's like, do you piss off Walker? Do you piss off Keontae? Because like, if you end up getting to a situation where you have to trade Lowry, then like, once Keontae's on a team that's actually going to win, like that could be his fourth or fifth year in the league.
Yeah, but you don't yeah. have to worry about pissing off those guys for a long time. Like, they're then, stuck I, there. I think, like, look at Eric Gordon, right? Eric Gordon wanted to leave the Clippers and the right. Pelicans / Hornets his entire career. And, like, it was 8 years before he finally got there, right? Like,
and now he
right.
doesn't want to be with the Suns.
Yeah. But the bigger risk is, like, if you're waiting for the disgruntled star, which you definitely are, like as these years unfold, you already have guys who don't want to come to Utah just based on Utah, right?
Yep.
And so like, but if you keep doing this, then you run the risk of guys being like, listen, I want out. I'm asking out of my deal. Trade me. I don't want to go to Detroit or Utah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also like, it feels like such a gamble to go in on like whoever this ostensible disgruntled star is, thinking that like that guy is just going to be an automatic great fit for the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
Like there could be a lot of players who end up like not working out in this current Utah Jazz system. And like, I don't know. It just feels like such a roll of the dice.
Well, I mean, the bigger problem to me, if you're the Utah Jazz waiting for the disgruntled star, is in the history of disgruntled stars, only one has ever just been traded to a place he didn't want to go, and it was Kawhi Leonard, and he was there a year and then left.
Still. Right. Yeah, that's the other thing. You got to make sure.
Have control over where they go, usually.
Yeah,
like, yeah, they do.
They give a list of 5 teams. And is
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is like,
on that list?
Yeah, let's right. just say hypothetically, like you know, the Suns flame out in the playoffs, and they do a fire sale, and the Jazz end up with Devin Booker. Like, how long until Devin Booker asks out?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and that's the thing is like trying to think about who the guy could be. Right. Like the Booker thing, I don't think that the Suns would actually blow up for at least another 2 years.
Yeah, I don't either. It was just a hypothetical.
I think like the honest to God, like most likely guys are Trae Young mm-hmm. and like Zion. And so Zion
we
would
know
even
you
be...
guys love Zion.
Yeah. So two guys that aren't going to get you anywhere near contention. You put
I don't
Trae
know. Up... I think Trae Young is getting too bad of a rap lately, actually. I think. Like
he's
yes,
a good player, but
play
he's
defense,
not gonna get like,
but it's not really his fault that well, it is his fault, but that it the things that are his fault are fixable problems, I feel like. Like
yeah, I do feel like Trae would play really good basketball with Lowry.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd be good for Walker too.
But I don't think like if Trae's the guy that you're going for, I don't think that's the one that moves you into title contention.
No, you put Trae Young on this team and you still get beat in 5 games by the Nuggets.
Yeah. And then like, and that's the thing is like, you know, Trae Young and Zion, if they're the most likely ones, like, is that what we're doing all this for?
Yeah, that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. Like,
yeah,
that does not, you add either, maybe both, and you're still not a contender.
And like, there's, you know, you run risks, right? It's like anybody who's really asking out, like, there are risks, right? Because it's either going to be like a guy who's too old, a la like James Harden or Dame. And yeah, those guys are really, really good. But like, you're then leveraging like all of that future draft capital for probably 1 year, because they're going to be on like 1 year deals and they're not going to want to stay, probably.
I think, though, there is like an actual middle ground here that we haven't considered, and it's what the Knicks have done. The Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis for a bunch of draft picks and had open draft capital and have built like a fun team, and then they had money to sign who people thought was a mid-tier guy and has turned out to be a higher-tier guy and
Jalen Brunson,
and have just consistently built a strong team and still have capital to add things if they want. Like,
now, see, yeah. I believe that is the right course of action. Like, if Sarah Todd were doing it, it'd be like, get some role players, one of them who might pop off and be sort of all-star level. Keep that flexibility and keep some of the draft picks. You don't got to pay 7 draft picks for someone. Like, you can do this. The problem that the argument is like, that's a fun team. That's fun. You're going to watch them go to the playoffs. They probably lose in the second round. I don't think the Knicks are winning a title, right?
No.
But like, that is fun. That is fun to have watched that built up and watch Jalen Brunson become a star. Do you want that fun team, or do you want to like go all in? Do you want fun, or do you want to win a title?
But I mean, I wouldn't necessarily declare the Knicks dead yet. Like, they're fun this year, but they could move some of those draft picks, more draft picks, or take that Boyan's out. But they're also the Knicks. Like, that's the other thing.
And
but
I would argue,
if I were the Jazz, I do think there is like a Jalen Brunson level guy that they could get, I think they could trade a draft pick tomorrow for Anthony Simons, and he is a guy who could pop like Jalen Brunson. Like,
yeah, I mean, there is a guy, and his name is Donovan Mitchell.
Well, but Anthony Simons, to me, is sort of this underrated, underutilized guy that if you look at his ability to shoot off the dribble from three is like elite, and people don't realize it because he plays for
the
Trailblazers.
Yeah.
And the Trailblazers would happily give him up for not that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think that's the route you have to go with the Utah Jazz, though. Like, you're not the New York Knicks, and like, you're not just going to be able to sign a Jalen Brunson type player in free agency. Like, a Jalen Brunson is not coming to the Utah Jazz.
I actually disagree.
I don't think that's
there.
The case. I mean, well, you're talking about a franchise who's the best free agent they've ever gotten in franchise history is Carlos Boozer.
Yeah, but Jalen Brunson was in the same exact scenario as Carlos Boozer. He was with a team who was undervaluing him, offering him less money, and the Knicks just happened to be the team with the money. And
there's a whole lot more cachet and a lot more intrigue and excitement about going and playing in New York City than Salt Lake City.
I just think we're all kind of forgetting that like the Mavs didn't want to pay Jalen Brunson like $12 million a year.
Which
like
is
that
very
is what
funny.
Actually happened, and the Knicks happened to have the cap room and the relationships, but it was really about the money. Like, and if you have the money, you can get that guy, the guy who, you know, and especially running into second aprons now, I think that's a thing that's going to happen more.
Fair.
With these good teams, like when they, like a guy, look, this guy's not a game changer, but a guy like Lu Dort is going to be available. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And Lu Dort's not a great NBA player, but he's a good NBA player. But
and he's a good defender, which is exactly Jazz need.
Teams are going to get squeezed here because of how punishing the apron is.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem with the second apron, too, is like once the Jazz are willing to actually make some of these moves, then you might be at the next like big cap increase. Yeah. And right. then it won't matter.
Yeah.
I will say, can I just change the topic slightly about, you know, like the Jazz and their future? I think the jury is still very much out on the young guys and like who they're going to be and if whether or not like Keontae, Taylor Hendricks and Bryce Sensabaugh are going to be any good in this league.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the thing that I give them a lot of credit for is they're playing extremely hard in the minutes that they're giving that they've been given. And I
feel very like good about Taylor Hendricks.
I'm starting to feel more and more good about him the more and more minutes he's been given. I think especially his defensive ceiling, like the fact that he can go from guarding, you know, like a shooting guard one night to Victor Wembanyama the next night and like do a decent job of holding his own. Like, I see what the Jazz are trying to do with this, like Taylor Hendricks, Walker Kessler front court. And I do think that there is some, like, some incredible potential there with the versatility of a Taylor Hendricks as well as his help side defense. He's had a couple just incredible help side blocks over the last, like, few games. And then you have, like, an incredible rim protector in Walker Kessler. Like, he's, last time I checked, he was leading the league in like rim protection field goal percentage, like top of the league.
I feel very good about them defensively. Like, but I mean, for young players like that young as Walker Kessler and Taylor Hendricks, for them to be able to have kind of those just natural instincts that you can tell, like, all right, if we polish the edges, like that's actually going to be good. Sometimes I think that because you have players that they got like Walker and Taylor, that we forget a little bit about offense. And so like, I really want Walker to become more aggressive offensively. And that's hard to do. It's hard to do when you're in a position where like the team, you're not running like post up plays for Walker Kessler. Okay. Yeah. And so like he has to just be like an aggressive cutter. He has to get stronger on offensive rebounds. Yeah. Yeah. Man, he doesn't have that dog in him. You know what I mean?
He doesn't dive hard enough. He'll like listen, set a screen and then kind of like float towards the rim.
And his screens, I mean,
run.
Listen, Utah's heard enough about screens for the last like eight years and they probably have anything to do with, but like Walker has to get better at screening. Like he does a lot of like just like touch and go screens and every once in a while he just like knocks a guy really hard and he's wide open after that. Like he just needs to learn like how much he can benefit from good screening because he's so long and that, like so last season, his rookie year, we saw so much of him like doing that Walker reverse dunk, like behind his head. Right. Yeah. You don't see nearly as much of that this year. And it's such a smart and beneficial move for him because if he does like dive or cut hard enough from like outside of the key, when someone's driving to the lane, he can pop up and get those and nobody's going to guard him like dunking those behind his head.
Yeah. But I wonder if some of that kind of lackadaisical rolling is not having a guy like Mike Conley, who's definitely going to give him the ball for half the season.
100% too.
Keontae, and I love Keontae. I think he's going to be a good player. And I really like, you know, I'm on the record about what I think about Colin Sexton, but these aren't guys looking for the role, man. They're just not.
Right.
No, they're not. They're looking to get buckets, especially I think Keontae kind of has that in his head now with these last few games of the season and this rookie year. It's like he's going to get his.
The nature of the beast that the Jazz have created right now is like, okay, well, if you're going to like sit down, if you're going to sit Lowry and Jordan Clarkson and John Collins, if you're going to sit a bunch of these guys and all of a sudden Keontae's in a position where it's like, okay, we need you to score like 30 tonight. Like, the mixed messaging on what his role is. I asked Will about that the other night. Like, that's a lot of information coming at a rookie where, like, how's he supposed to know one night to the next what he's supposed to do? I mean, he does know what he's supposed to do one night to the next, but, like, becoming a future Jamal Murray-ish type player, like, is that going to be beneficial? And Will was like, yeah, I think it is uncomfortable for him to be kind of like seesawing back and forth right now, but, like, being uncomfortable and, like, f-ing up right now could help him in the end. Of course, you know, he's not going to say, like, nope, really bad for his development. This is not great. He's not going to say that on the record, you know? So.
Sarah, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Did you talk to John Collins after Anthony Edwards, like, literally his season?
We should talk about that.
No, John was not in the arena after the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could John function after that? That's one of the most violent dunks I've ever seen in my life. Like, I've seen a lot of.
It's the best dunk ever.
I really
think it might be.
Especially the fact he took off, like, outside of the dotted area.
For everyone saying that he
launched himself,
his hand didn't touch the rim. Don't care. Absolutely don't care.
I don't care.
Nope.
Like, this
still a dunk.
If we want to get technical, if I'm gonna, like, tape up my glasses frames and be like, well, technically you don't have to touch the rim on a dunk. You just have to throw it in at a heightened level. It was a dunk, and it was awesome.
The dunky and the dunked on both got injured.
Yeah.
It's
incredible.
If
you dunk on someone so hard that you dislocate your finger, mm-hmm. build the statue now. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And listen, I did not talk to John after that, but I'll say this to John Collins' credit. If someone dunked on me so hard that I was getting concussion evaluated, I would also leave the arena.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, fully stand behind that decision.
Wild.
Yeah.
Great.
That
dunk.
Was wild. It was an incredible dunk.
I passed up tickets to that. I had an opportunity to go to that game, and I was like, nah, I got stuff to do around the house. I got, like.
Do you?
And then. I did. I had things to do.
You could have done that the next day.
I could have done it the next day. I'm kicking myself for not going.
Speaking of which,
would have been amazing to see live.
Spurs set to come back to the Delta Center next week, I believe. So, Wemby. Baby.
What Wemby's doing post All-Star game is unreal.
Victor Wembanyama is so fun to watch play basketball.
Can I just talk about that in context of the Utah Jazz too? Because it's like, guys, what is this timeline? Because you got maybe two or three years before not only OKC fully gels and you've got, like, the big three of J-Dub, Chet,
but Victor and just starts winning titles.
And then all of a sudden you have Victor Wembanyama, who's putting up, like, 30-point triple doubles in his rookie season.
On,
like,
blocks.
This is the worst he's going to be.
Yeah, this is the worst.
And, like, you're going to have to go up against this guy for the next 10, 15 years. What's the plan here?
And the other guy just dunked so hard on one of your own players that he had injured him.
That he ended his season. So, like, it's not, and that's the thing that's so weird. Is, like, yeah, you hear the thing, oh, like, the Clippers are, like, they're getting the band back together for one last title run. LeBron turns 40 next year. You know, how long could Jokic really keep this up? And it's like, that doesn't matter, because there's an entire flock of new young talent ready to take over the league.
Jokic can keep this up forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jokic can literally watch plays in the offseason and do this for another 10 years.
I agree with that. He has a game that's going to age perfectly. But what I'm saying is, like, you're seeing a lot, or you're hearing a lot of talk of, like, this changing of the guard. Changing of the guard, like, It doesn't mean, like, that the talent level is getting any worse. Like, you
if
have
anything, the talent level is getting
better. You have 2-3 years before SGA, Anthony Edwards, and Victor Wembanyama are bona fide top five players in this league. And those guys are all guys you have to see 3 to 4 times a season and have to play in the playoffs.
And they're really good.
And they're really, really good. And by then, OKC in 2-3 years, when they like have that playoff experience too, because I don't think that team's going anywhere.
Chet scored 18 points in the fourth quarter against the Jazz the other night.
Walker had 35 points, sent Taylor Hendricks to the shadow realm. Like, he's so good. And again, this is also the worst that Chet home run's going to be.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. It's like, I love Walker. I think Walker is a good NBA player, but he's not Chet Holmgren.
He's not Chet Holmgren.
And he's not Wemby. Like, that's a rough... Like, that's good your best young player. Good luck guarding those guys
for the next
like,
decade.
I don't know. It's rough. Hopefully and they like, get Cooper Flagg, I guess.
I mean, is that it? Is that what they're going for? Because, like, and even as much as I love Lauri Markkanen, and I think that he is a bona fide star player in this league, do I think that Lauri Markkanen's ceiling is higher than Chet Holmgren or Victor Wembanyama's? Absolutely not. I think both of those guys surpass Lowry, and I think it happens quickly. So, what the f*** is the plan? Sorry, Joey, I know you have to make the edits for this, but what is it?
And again, that's why I brought this up at the beginning of the episode, is like, do you actually have a plan that's going to take you above those guys? And if not, like, can we just have some fun? Like, do we need to tank for 4 seasons, or can we just have some fun?
Yeah, and I think, that's the... I would be fine having fun. We're talking about the Utah Jazz. We're talking about one of the most impoverished franchises in the history of the NBA.
Okay, no. That is insane. You're crazy.
I'm not crazy. They've had like
you
the win
made the NBA Finals twice.
25 years ago.
But you cannot. There are plenty of NBA franchises that have never made the finals.
Fine. There are more impoverished franchises than the Utah Jazz. That doesn't mean that
said
it's not
one of the most impoverished franchises.
I agree. And
ever.
I stand by that.
You're insane.
No.
We allow hyperbole on this podcast.
Fine. They're not the Sacramento Kings. That's a hell of a sell. The Utah Jazz. Not the Charlotte Hornets.
They're not.
Not the Charlotte Hornets.
I mean.
Cool. So you've named 2 teams out of 30.
Not the Washington Wizards. Again.
I'm just saying they're a more successful franchise than the Oklahoma City Thunder.
That's a baby of a franchise.
But I'm just saying.
For what? Right. 2 more years?
I love this conversation because, like, even as we try to be like sell the Utah Jazz, like, hey, not the most impoverished.
Yeah. I mean, they went 2 decades making the playoffs every single year. You cannot claim.
Which was fun.
Yes.
That's my point.
I agree
and
with you.
And that's what I'm getting
I'm
at. I would be fine with that.
You cannot claim they're one of the most impoverished franchises ever when they made the playoffs for 20 straight years.
Fine.
And when I hear Justin Zanuck saying things like, I think the quote was, you know, I don't want to just win. I want to win for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's like, well,
okay, how?
You were doing that.
Yeah.
You were doing that. That's what you were doing. Now you're not winning at all. Mm-hmm.
And it also just makes me think, too, with what they've done and the way that they've gutted the roster the last 2 years and this whole youth movement makes me think that even though guys like Lowry have sped up the rebuild, or at least we thought that is, we might have to pump the brakes on that. And this really might be like a 4, 5, 6 year like Oklahoma City Thunder type
the
rebuild.
More we talk about this, the more I think they're trading Lowry in the next 2 years.
I'm kind of leaning that way as well. I think they're going to trade him.
I think that, honestly, like the most telling thing, which I think that I'm probably agreeing at this point, because I think this offseason, like, the biggest move that they're probably going to make is going to be, like, trading Jordan. Like, I don't think that they're going to make a move that's going to bring in someone this free, like, offseason. And so if they go into next season more or less the same team, then, like, it's obvious, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what's going to happen. I think that people really need to be prepared for the fact that, like, you will not be getting what you thought you were getting with this Jazz team.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that this is, it's looking more like what we thought was going to be a 2 or 3 year thing is going to be a 4 or 5, 6 year thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Tight.
Well, is that where we leave it today? Yeah.
I'm sure Victor Wembanyama is going to be really bad in 5 years.
I want to ask you guys a question. Do you guys believe James Harden? Did you see what he did when he closed out on Kawhi, and then he claimed the reason was, well, he thought the vibes were bad and he wanted to have some, he thought the team would enjoy it and have some fun. Do you believe that, or do you think he momentarily forgot what team he was on?
Oh, I think it's former.
They were up
21. I think he was
Kawhi around. Was pissed.
Yeah, I mean, he should be. I'd be pissed if my own team did that, too.
I missed this. When did this happen?
2 days ago. James Harden passed the ball to Kawhi in the corner and then ran out and closed out on him.
And Kawhi ended up missing the three,
yeah.
Well, there's an absolute chance that he forgot what his team.
Same.
Oopsies.
It is one of the funniest things that I've ever seen happen on a basketball court.
It was
court,
very,
no
very
matter
funny.
What the reasoning was.
Isn't that kind of like was a worse version of the like the fake block that LeBron tried to do on the Rondo layup a few years ago? Very funny.
I love Daniel Gafford on the Mavs.
That's been so a perfect.
What an absolutely perfect fit.
Yeah.
Congratulations to anyone that gets out of DC alive.
Kyle Kuzma had the chance.
Kuz. Godspeed, my guy.
There needs to be, yeah. He's
good for Daniel Gafford.
Kyle Kuzma is a one of one. Just put it that way.
He is a one of one.
I've said it on Round Ball Rock before. I'll say it again. He's the NBA's Pete Davidson.
100%.
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's a great comparison. Yeah.
Come on the show, my guy.
We can talk. Yeah, we both have mountain tattoos. We can talk about mountain tattoos.
All right. That's going to do it from us today. You guys know what to do. Rate, review, subscribe, download, do all the things. You can follow me at NBA Sarah. You can follow Greg at Dad Sham Dad. You can listen to Round Ball Rock, Joey's other podcast.
If you're going to listen to Round Ball Rock, listen this week. We do a thing every year for March Madness that is, I think, the best thing we do every year.
It's a lot of fun.
Which is...
Absolutely.
We have Sean and I pick the most notable alumni from every college and pit them against each other in the bracket.
Perfect.
Paul Rove, University of Utah, baby.
I forget who went for BYU this year. Hold on. Every year I almost pick Neil LaBute and then I don't because
Ryan
I think
Smith,
funny.
Owner of the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, no, it was BYU. Hold on, I've got to pull it up. But yeah, we have it's a funny bracket this year for sure.
I do think it's cool that
Utah
like
State.
The two most notable alumni from my college are Karl Rove and Ted Bundy. Mm-hmm. You know, two very notorious serial killers.
BYU's Stephen Covey, the author of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, lost to Duquesne's Werner Herzog in the first round.
I love they have two bits of the Cougars.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Werner Herzog went to Duquesne.
I saw Pittsburgh.
My head exploded when I saw
we
it.
Stan like, yeah. LeBron James.
What we need to tell everyone is we love steel country. I love the heartland of America, Pittsburgh. I love to put French fries on sandwich.
Love the heartland of America. All right, I'm getting off. This is over. All right.
This Bye. Is now Nihilist Werner Herzog's podcast. Nothing matters.
Okay. We will talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.
Pittsburgh.